You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Hello, I'm Miles O'Brien in today for Leonard Lopate, in all week for him. As we approach the 2010 midterm elections, the Tea Party has emerged as a real political force. It remains to be seen whether it will help lead to a Republican sweep. Kate Czernicki, a national correspondent for The New York Times, gives the first definitive account of the Tea Party movement, digging deep into its philosophy and ideology and the players behind it all. Her new book is called Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America. It is the first account of the people who make up the Tea Party, where they came from, what they stand for. It's published by Times Books, and it's just out today. Very pleased to have Kate Czernicki with us here on the Leonard Lopate Show. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Miles.
All right, so a lot of people would go back to that moment, perhaps, in February of 2009. CNBC, the reporter is Rick Santelli. The subject is bailing out people who are underwater on their mortgages. Let's listen. Do we have that? Well, imagine, if you will, Rick Santelli.
I'll recreate it for you.
On the floor of the exchange, and he's hopping mad, and he actually uses the term, we're going to have a tea party here. Was that the moment?
That was a moment. It was not the moment. Things had been percolating weeks before, and this is what I talk about in my book. It starts, actually, the vision of the Tea Party is sort of a bunch of old people at a rally. It actually starts several weeks before. There were things percolating around the country. It starts with a young woman in Seattle. She's 29 years old. She's a young teacher.
Wait a minute, Seattle. That's not
Seattle.
Exactly.
I mean, this is hotbed of red America.
This is not off the grid, Idaho. We're talking about here. Tell us about that.
Well, so she's now married to an Obama voter, and he got a little fed up with hearing her rant on about how much she didn't think the stimulus package should pass. So he says, you know, why don't you just stop talking to me about it? Start your own blog. So she starts her own blog, and then she says, this really isn't enough. And a week later, she decides she's going to have a protest. And
this is before Rick Santelli.
This is 3 weeks, actually 2 weeks before Rick Santelli.
Okay.
And there are people around the country doing this, and it tends to be sort of these young, tech-savvy libertarians who don't agree with bailouts, don't agree with stimulus spending, have very free market ideas about the economy, and they start organizing because they are tech-savvy and they know enough to call or to email conservative bloggers, and they get a few people out. She gets about 200 people to her protest in Seattle. And then Santelli does his rant a week and a half later.
Oh, you know what? I think we have the rant. Let's play the rant just to go back
in time.
This is
America, he says.
Rant away.
How about this, President and new administration? Why don't you put up a website to have people vote on the internet as a referendum to see if we really want to subsidize the losers' mortgages, or would we like to at least buy cars and buy houses in foreclosure and give them to people that might have a chance to actually prosper down the road and reward people that could carry the water instead of drink the water.
Hey, Rick,
that's a novel idea.
Hey, Rick, did you?
What? Who thought of that?
They're like putty in your hands. Did you hear?
No, they're not, Joe. They're not like putty in our hands. This is America. How many of you people want to pay for your neighbor's mortgage that has an extra bathroom and can't pay their bills? Raise their hand.
Wow, have another venti latte, Rick, will you? You know, it's kind of a Howard Beale network moment in a way.
Absolutely.
And you could say, well, that was just an odd meltdown, but it turned out to really capture some things.
No, well, it really set a spark to this flame. And within a couple of weeks, Glenn Beck, who is another Howard Beale figure in this whole thing, calls for the formation of 9-12 groups. And he says he wants them to bring us back to the spirit of unity that the country felt on 9-12. And he bases it on 9 principles and 12 values. And we've seen the kind of people that Glenn Beck can call out. We saw it a couple of weeks ago on the National Mall in Washington. So we just get a ton of people coming out to start tea parties. By April, it's really taking off. But what's really important to note about the Tea Party is that everyone's focused on the rallies, everyone's focused on the signs and the crazy rants from Rick Santelli. But what starts happening is they really start organizing, and they start thinking about how they're going to take over the Republican Party and move it to the right. And what they're really doing is they're looking at the liberals' playbook, and they're looking at how Obama won in 2008, and they're saying, we need to do that. We don't like what the left does, but we need to learn from it, and we need to do those same things.
Interesting. So it seems to me when you look at the Kelly Carinders of the world, who was involved in this before the Rick Santelli meltdown, that might be the same people you would have seen at a Ron Paul rally, right?
Absolutely.
Young, you know, internet savvy, that type?
Absolutely. And there's a really interesting dichotomy in this movement. It does start out with these young tech-savvy Ron Paul types. And they kind of set the ideology for the movement, and they're really the first protesters. So the people that we think of as the Tea Partiers, who are these, you know, what polls tell us are sort of these over 45, over 65 year old white guys from red America, those really aren't Tea Partiers. The Tea Partiers, you have to remember that the Tea Partiers are also these young libertarians, and they start the movement. And they set this ideology that's very, as I said, it's very free market. They want to do things like phase out Social Security and Medicare. Those are things that aren't necessarily popular with the rest of Tea Partiers, but they've made this this unusual alliance between them, and it's been really powerful, as we've seen.
They're not using Social Security or Medicare, and so they don't care so much,
exactly.
Right?
But the bulk of Tea Partiers are using Medicare and Social Security, and they're mad enough that they're going to get out there and protest anyway.
Well, we can talk about those contradictions in a moment. Let's talk a little bit more about the roots of this. This is Ayn Rand kind of stuff, mm-hmm. right? Atlas Shrugged. You could trace this through the John Birch Society. You could go through Barry Goldwater. What is new about this, if anything?
Well, I think what's new about it is how fast it's spread. I mean, look, it took, you know, the Goldwater movement is the early 1960s, and we don't elect a Republican or we don't elect one of their candidates until we get Ronald Reagan in 1980. So it really took a long time. The Tea Party movement started incredibly quickly. It starts in February of 2009. Rick Santelli says he wants to have a Tea Party in July. And a week later, in February, we've already got Tea Parties across the country. So it's really spread. I do think that they've gotten very savvy about how to get out the vote. They're very idealistic. They see this as a mission. Some people describe it as the most important thing they've done with their lives. But they are pragmatic, and they know how to get results quickly.
All right. So we've got in the stew here, we've got this kind of thread of, you know, American individualism, libertarianism. You've got people who were on the right but not happy with John McCain. Then you have the collapse of the markets and the TARP, which followed. And then all of a sudden, Obama healthcare comes along. And so what's missing here is a leader, right? Or is there a leader?
Well, there are certainly people that the Tea Party admires. And, of course, everyone thinks Sarah Palin is the leader of the Tea Party, or they think Glenn Beck is the leader of the Tea Party. And the Tea Party people really like Sarah Palin. They think she's great, but they don't think she should be president. A lot of people mistake.
Why not?
Well, they don't think she's qualified. They're just like other Americans. If you look at polls and if you look at focus groups and surveys and if you talk to people, they don't think she's qualified to be president either. They're looking for someone. They're looking for sort of, you know, more boring people like Mitch Daniels, who's the Indiana governor who's sort of turned the state around, the fiscal situation around there. They don't think Sarah Palin's qualified. They love Glenn Beck. They get their news from him. Glenn Beck is sort of the Oprah of the Tea Party movement. But
no couch, just the blackboard.
Yeah. Exactly, just the blackboard. But look at how powerful the blackboard can be, you know?
Right.
So they're very determinedly leaderless, and they really feel that the country has been, it's very, as you say, it's very individualistic. They want the federal government out of their lives. The rallying cry of this movement is leave us alone. And so they don't want a leader. They don't want someone to come in from above. Of course, they do want to take over the country, so they're going to need to find their president or someone to get behind. But right now, they think that bottom up is better, grassroots is better.
Bit of a contradiction there, though.
Oh, absolutely.
Ultimately, if you want to take power, you have to pick somebody to lead you.
Right, absolutely. And we're seeing, for instance, in some of these primaries today in New Hampshire, there are several Tea Party candidates who probably won't win in both congressional districts in New Hampshire. They probably won't win because the Tea Partiers are splitting their vote. But in the bulk of cases, again, the Tea Party is so well organized, and they are taking, you know, they're learning from Saul Alinsky, who used the last person you'd think would be their hero. He's not their hero. They don't agree with his politics, but they agree with his community organizing, the father of modern community organizing. Barack Obama, they don't agree with him. They think he's a great community organizer. They're learning from his campaign, and they're getting people to the polls.
Interesting how they are using technology. Now, the rap on this early on, and you don't hear it as much anymore, is that this was not a grassroots movement, that it was AstroTurf.
Right. And that's completely wrong. And I think, you know, people who – we've heard a lot of debate about, oh, it's AstroTurf, or, oh, they're all racists. And really, that's kind of – it's wasting time to debate that, because whether or not you agree with the Tea Party, you need to understand it. And the thing you need to understand is how they're getting out there and getting people to the polls. You need to understand what they believe and what they might do as candidates, because we're going to have some Tea Party senators come November. We've already seen it in Alaska. I think they may win some other races. But yeah, this is, you know, we have to understand where this is coming from.
All right. Well, grassroots can go.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, the grassroots.
Yeah.
I mean, This movement was certainly organized by groups like Freedom Works, which is Dick, the group that Dick Armey runs. And they have been incredibly good about training people. And they, you know, their phrase is hard work beats daddy's money. And so across the country, they're really working, you know, they're teaching Tea Party leaders that. But they've been trying to start groups like Freedom Works and Americans for Prosperity. There was a big article in The New Yorker about them a couple weeks ago. They've been trying to
the
grow.
The Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers, exactly.
Funders of that.
Right. They have been trying to grow a grassroots movement for years, and they haven't had any luck because there wasn't the popular anger out there or the populist anger. And what happened here was the economy collapsed, and that brought people to the streets in a way that nothing's been able to before. So we have to understand this as a genuine popular grassroots movement, even if we don't agree with it.
Do you think they get this in the White House?
I think they started to get it. I don't think they got it fast enough. I mean, I think they sort of thought Scott Brown was a bit of an aberration. I think they didn't see these primaries coming. I think they felt fairly confident of their ability to paint all these people as crazy. And the truth is they're not crazy. I mean, there's certainly a fringe. There's a fringe to every movement, but we can't see this. We can't brand an entire movement as crazy people.
Let's talk a little bit about what this says about people's view of the Obama administration and the president in particular. You can't help but you start talking about the Tea Party. You get into the birther talk pretty quickly. Are these people birthers as well? Are these people who question whether Obama is truly an American, who question his religion, that sort of thing?
There are certainly people within the movement who do that. I was at a rally this weekend, and there's a sign saying, you know, above a picture of Barack Obama, there's a sign saying undocumented worker. So obviously it's there. But again, for the most part, the people that you meet when you go beyond these rallies, when you go on a Sunday afternoon to some organizing meeting in Pennsylvania or Kentucky or Arizona, wherever you are, they don't tend to be birthers. They tend to be people who really feel that, in fact, the Republican Party has left them. They're not so much concerned with the Democrats. They feel the Republican Party has abandoned them, and they want to move it to the right, and they want to make it more fiscally conservative. And so they're not so much concerned with President Obama's birth certificate. And in fact, they often think that that demeans their movement to focus so much on those questions.
Is there some racism at the root here?
No.
You said not to talk about that's missing the point in a sense. But
I think it's missing the point a little. I think it's missing the point to debate that endlessly, because I think there are larger questions about the Tea Party that we need to talk about. But certainly there is racism in some of this. There's racism in any movement. I don't think it's the genesis of the Tea Party. I don't think it's the motivating. I don't think there's some motivating animus here.
Now, what about the idea of middle of the road Republicans? Is that becoming an anachronism? Are there Republicans who are really in their heart of hearts very worried about the Tea Party?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think Republicans, you know, Republicans after 2008 or 2006 and 2008 were really demoralized. They didn't know what to do. They didn't know how they would get their mojo back. And I think they thought that the solution was to move the party more to the center. And so the last thing they expected was the Tea Party to come from so far to the right and tell them that, in fact, they needed to move the party right. But what they've seen in these primaries that over the past several months, and races like the Senate race in Florida, which has gotten a lot of attention, they've seen that these Tea Parties want them to move the party to the right. Now, whether or not that works in November is another question.
Well, this is always the problem with primaries, right?
Exactly.
You can move to the right or the left, depending on which side you're on. But when it comes time for the November election, it's a different story, isn't it?
Right. Absolutely. And I think if the Tea Party does not succeed, if these Tea Party candidates do not succeed in November, the Republican Party is going to say, look, conservatives can't win, and we need to move back to the middle. But I do think people are so angry. I think people are just... First of all, I think the Tea Party is organized, as I've said, but I also think people are so angry that the Tea Party has almost become more a state of mind than a political party or a movement. And so people are willing to give anything a try just because they want some kind of change again.
My guest is Kate Czernicke. Her latest book is Boiling Mad, Inside the Tea Party America. Inside Tea Party America. It's published by Times Books, an imprint of Henry Holt. We'll continue after we take a break. Stay with us. Welcome back. My guest is Kate Czernicke. Her latest book, Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America, published by Times Books. Kate, good to have you with us.
Thanks.
It obviously happened after you wrote the book. Let's talk a little bit about Glenn Beck and the rally. What did you think of that?
Well, again, Glenn Beck is the Tea Party's Oprah. So if Glenn Beck tells people to come to Washington on a hot Saturday in August, They're going to come to Washington. I think what was surprising even to many people there was how apolitical it was and how I think a lot of people came expecting it to be like a Tea Party rally, and it wasn't. There weren't signs. He told everyone to leave their signs at home. It was really more like a religious revival. But in many ways, we have to think of the Tea Party that way too. Not that it's religious. One big mistake that people make about the Tea Party is assuming that they are just sort of the same old Christian conservatives, and they want to talk about gay marriage. They want to talk about abortion. They're very conservative in those ways. In fact, they don't want to talk about those issues. They think the Republican Party has focused way too much on those issues. They think Terri Schiavo was a disaster talking about that for so long. They want to talk about smaller government, lower spending, et cetera.
But just to back up, though, how do they feel about all those social issues? They're still very anti-abortion.
Again, there's an age break here. So the young libertarians in this movement, they tend to support gay marriage. They tend to think that abortion is a woman's right, believe in a woman's right to choose. But even if they're socially conservative themselves, they don't want to talk about those issues. They also feel like the Tea Party movement will be more broadly appealing if they don't talk about those issues.
So that implies that there's a political calculation there. Is that it? Or do they just not want to talk about those social issues for ideological reasons?
I think it's a little of both, actually. Yeah. I think it's a little of both. I think, one, they think that they'll get more people to their movement. And I also think, as one of them said to me, people don't like it when you get hung up on all that old Ralph Reed stuff. But I think also they're fairly savvy, and they think they can get Democrats who are, as one person put it, freaked out by the stimulus and things like that on their side if they don't talk about those issues. So that's they don't want to talk about social issues. They definitely want to focus on the fiscal things.
What do they see then? Do they truly see a Tea Party? Is it correct to call them a Tea Party member? A Tea Party.
We call them Tea Party believer. Supporters. I'd like to call them Tea Partiers.
A Tea Partier in the Oval Office, is that the goal?
Ideally, I think that's their goal. But I think they also look out there, and this is one of the things that's motivating them. They look out there and they don't see leaders. They don't think Sarah Palin is a credible leader, most of them. They really don't.
They like to cheer her on, though.
They
right?
love to cheer her on. They find her tremendously entertaining. Michelle Bachmann, same, from Minnesota, same thing. They think she's tremendously entertaining,
but
they don't think she's president.
You betcha, exactly.
The You Betcha girls. So I don't think they see those people, but I think they ultimately think that they want to develop a new generation of conservative leaders. But those people will be people who are fiscal conservatives. So again, it's fairly. I would say boring people like Mitch Daniels, governor of Indiana, Chris Christie. They love Chris Christie in New Jersey because they think that he's whacked the budget and taken on the teachers' unions and things like that.
Now, you said that there were some things about the Constitution that they have unusual views about. Talk a little bit about that.
And, Glenn Beck talks about the Constitution a lot, and people kind of say, the Constitution, what's wrong with that? We can all agree that we believe in the Constitution. But this is a view, it's a very particular view of the Constitution. One of the books that Glenn Beck talks about reading is this book called The 5,000-Year Leap, which is a very churchy view of the Constitution. It believes that the Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution with natural law or God's law in mind. But this is just one of the many books that makes up what I think of as sort of the Tea Party canon. And the Tea Party canon includes sort of classics of Austrian economics, which is a very sort of nihilistic view of economics that says that economic planning doesn't work. Their view of the Constitution is that we need to, as Dick Armey, who's one of the leaders of this, would say, if you don't understand the Constitution, I'll give you a dictionary. So it's a very originalist view of the Constitution. They think that in the Constitution, Congress has only about 22 powers. There are only 22 things Congress should be doing. So everything that we think of as our federal government, the ways we've come to see the federal government since the New Deal, all that they think is unconstitutional. They think the New Deal was a disaster. That is part of Tea Party – that's sort of part of Tea Party understanding.
So government is left to – defense and on a local level, police and fire.
Depending on how libertarian you are,
how hardcore is this?
It depends on how libertarian you are. I mean, some of them would say that it's a lot of this should be left to the states. That it's things like roads and defense. I'm trying to think of what the other things are in the Constitution. I mean, the Postal Service is in there. They like the Postal Service, but they don't think that they should. They don't think there should be a Department of Education. They don't think there should be Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security. All these had Department of Housing and Urban Development. They think that is just that the federal government has way expanded its reach and the scope of things it does. It's not that they want no government. It's just that they think the states should be doing more and that this should be much more local control. Again, the rallying cry here is leave us alone. And what I talk about in the book a bit is this isn't so unfamiliar to us. If you look at the number of the increase in the number of people who are homeschooling their kids, if you look at the increase in the number of people who are refusing to vaccinate their children, these people really don't trust the government anymore. They don't trust institutions to tell them what to do. They really rely on the individual. And when you look at the institutions, at the people they trust the most, it's technology entrepreneurs. It's people who are sort of, you know, rugged individualists.
Well, if you look at recent history, the government hasn't done much to earn all of our trust, has it? And you can see where this disaffection comes from.
Oh, absolutely. And that's why I say, you know, again, these people are not all crazy. And I think when you read the book, or if you go to these meetings and you talk to them, you can kind of, you know, even if you're a raving liberal from New York City, you can kind of see some areas of agreement. But I think, this is something that we've seen decline in trust of institutions over the last several years. So it's not that surprising that the Tea Party would come up.
When we look at a Tea Party rally, are we seeing all that there is, or is that just the tip of the iceberg?
That's just the tip of the iceberg. I mean, it's sort of the frosting on the cake. I don't know how you want to put it, but it's certainly the most flamboyant. And you can't discount those people. You have to recognize them as part of the Tea Party. But again, it's the blind man and the elephant. It depends on where you're standing, your view of the Tea Party. And I think, you know, you see one thing when you go to the rallies. You see an entirely different thing when you go to some of these organizing meetings, when it really is people who aren't that concerned with standing out there and yelling and carrying signs. They think that's all a little bit ridiculous, but they are very interested in getting people to the polls, and they've found common ground there together.
And do you really believe the ones you spoke with, these ones who are really at the core of organizing it, not necessarily the ones who show up for the rallies, just to vent, do you really believe that they have a true ideological purpose?
I think the ones I spoke to who are, you know, there were some like Kelly Carrender, who's a young woman we talk about in Seattle, and she is so ideological and she's so true believer. And I went with her. She went to the state capitol in Olympia, Washington, and she was trying to lobby her legislators against some tax increases. And it was really amazing talking to her. I mean, she was such a true believer, and she really fought with these people, and they offered her, she said that she wanted to start her own business. And at one point they said, the state has some programs to help out women and minorities. You should look into some of those grants. And she just looked like she wanted to explode because, of course, she said, I don't want the government to help me. I want you to leave me alone. So there is a true believer core here. And I found that.
So no hypocrisy with her.
Absolutely not. No. She believes that she believes that health care can be left to charity. She believes that people would actually take care of each other, and she truly believes it. When you press her, she truly believes it. On the opposite end, there are people, and these are the people that I talk about who've sort of provided the numbers to the Tea Party. If people like Kelly Carrender were the first Tea Partiers and organized them, and some of the suburban mothers I talked to who organized some of the earliest Tea Parties, they were really swelled by older people who are tend to be older than 65, who were really just freaked out about the economy and worried about their savings going away. Often they were underwater in their homes or just looking at their 401ks that had been severely depleted. And they're more motivated by fear, and their ideology was much more evolving. And so you would talk to them in it, and often if they were on Medicare or Social Security, you got the sense that they didn't really understand that those actually were government programs. And when you press them, well, but those are government programs and you're against the government, they would say, yeah, but they're not working. And the government just drives everything into bankruptcy. And so their ideology is definitely evolving. And you can see it. You know, again, they read these books. They read The 5,000-Year Leap, or they read, you know, The Road to Serfdom, which is a Friedrich Hayek book from the last century. And a book called Frederick Bastiat's The Law, which are sort of these obscure texts of Austrian economics. And they read them, and they suddenly become very ideological. And they start believing in all these things, even though it's against their self-interest because they're on Social Security, they're on Medicare. Those are programs that wouldn't exist under their ideology.
So they're saying, we don't want the government doing health care, but don't touch my Medicare.
Exactly. And this is where I think what confused so many people about the Tea Party early on was this crazy contradiction, you know, the famous comment at a town hall last summer, you know, keep your government hands off my Medicare. And I think what explains that contradiction is this dichotomy in the movement between young and old, the young people who start organizing the movement and the old people who really fill out those rallies. They don't always agree. I think when pressed, they wouldn't always agree with what some of the younger people are talking about. But they do know that they're very, very angry at the government. They think the government has screwed everything up.
I'm speaking with Kate Czernicki. Her latest book is Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America. Kate, how big is this movement really? Do we know?
We don't know. I mean, polls have shown it. The New York Times did a poll in April, and it showed that 18% of Americans called themselves Tea Party supporters. Within that group, there was 4% that said that they went to rallies or had donated money to the cause. So that's a pretty small percentage of Americans. Other polls have put it at 25% or 30%. Again, it's not huge. But I think, again, we have to remember the Tea Party is becoming more a state of mind than it is a movement or a political party. So there are a lot of people out there who maybe don't go to the rallies, but have this sense that they sympathize with what the Tea Party is doing. And so they might be inclined to vote for a Tea Party candidate.
These Tea Party candidates, in many cases, are, well, I guess we could all agree, maybe not ready for prime time, right?
Right.
What have we been seeing out there?
Well, of course, the most famous is Rand Paul, who comes out on his first day and says that he doesn't agree with the 1964 Civil Rights Act, which is, of course, kind of a tenet of for some libertarians and this belief that the federal government has abused the Commerce Clause in enacting these kind of laws. Basic civil rights laws. But we've also seen, there's some sort of...
And this is why people would say racism applies.
Absolutely.
Here, when you hear that kind of stuff.
Exactly. When you hear states' rights, the first thing you think of is, George Wallace or, the Civil War and slavery. Rand Paul and Sharon Angle in Nevada is another sort of famous case. But then there are all these congressional candidates who are, saying things like, grab your bayonets. I mean, that's another thing about the Tea Party is they really see they take this Revolutionary War metaphor very seriously. They see themselves like the Founding Fathers, sort of getting back to basics on the Constitution. They think they're fighting this sort of, distant government that's been very cruel to them. And so you've got candidates like Alan West in Florida who says, great, get your muskets, get your bayonets. We need to make his opponent scared to come out of his house.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Sarah Palin's always talking about, reloading and
reload. Yeah.
Reaiming or whatever right. She's doing. But I mean, really, the rhetoric is you could look at it and say that's a bit irresponsible. We love the First Amendment. It's why we're in business.
Exactly.
But when you talk that way, people interpret it in a way that perhaps it's not meant. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Or are those code words deliberate?
I don't think for most people those code words are deliberate. Again, I think there are a lot of people. I have seen some Tea Party candidates who get out and talk about the president's birth certificate, and they absolutely mean it. They mean to raise doubts about whether President Obama is legitimately American, and they want to sort of – even if people sort of think, oh, the birth certificate thing isn't really real, it's to raise doubts about him as sort of foreign. He's not one of us. So I think that absolutely exists. And I think, I think they don't understand how powerful this is among certain people. I mean, I watched Rand Paul at a rally in Kentucky, and he said, when I get up to the Senate, I'm going to band together with four or five other conservatives, and we're going to just stop up the business of the Senate for a week until we can get them to debate a balanced budget amendment, which is something that has been debated and never passed before. And some guy in the crowd cheered gridlock, and suddenly the whole crowd was going, gridlock, gridlock. So this is what, they want gridlock government. They think gridlock's a good thing. I'm not sure many Americans would agree.
Yeah. When you hear those terms, when you hear Newt Gingrich call President Obama colonialist and Kenyan.
Right.
There's got to be a racial component to that.
Absolutely. But don't mistake Newt Gingrich for a Tea Partier. He's not.
He's not.
He's not. And he's not the candidate for a lot of Tea Partiers. They look at that and think it's buffoonery, too. I mean, I think there are many Tea Partiers out there who really want this movement to be taken seriously. They want to talk about fiscal issues, and they think that this demeans their movement.
I know reporters try to go in with a wide open mind, but you must have had some preconceptions about what the Tea Party was. And I'm curious what you brought into the book that were perhaps dispelled in your research.
Well, in some ways, I approach this book, I write for the New York Times, obviously, and I get incredible hate mail. Luckily, I get it from both sides, which makes me think I'm somewhere down the middle. But, I get such mail from conservatives who always think the New York Times can't possibly be fair to them. So in many ways, I was just more determined than ever to prove that I could be open-minded about this. And so I really did set out to find, who there are people in the Tea Party. I was like, oh, you liberals want to figure out who are these people? But I really did want to know who are these people. And so I guess, I was perhaps surprised, pleasantly so, to find that people welcomed me and you know, talked to me quite openly. And, you know, again, these people, they're not all crazy. There are certainly crazy elements out there, but I guess that was the biggest thing that I found.
So as a when you say I'm with the New York Times, what's the reaction typically when you're meeting, when you're at a Tea Party group and you say I'm with the New York Times? They must be some interesting exchanges.
Yeah, I mean, actually, the angriest response I've gotten was in the line at a Sarah Palin book signing, where someone actually threatened to rip up my notebook when she found where it was going. But there was another point where I was going to a meeting and I was introduced as someone, or I guess. I was going to a Sunday morning meeting, and the host of that called me that morning, and she said, "You know, you can't come because I told them you were coming, and I said someone from the New York Times was coming, and they just don't want you there." And I said, "Oh, but you know, I'm writing this book," and somehow the fact that I was writing a book was fine. They let me come because I was writing a book, but it was, as a New York Times reporter, they didn't want me there.
Now, is this a book that Glenn Beck is going to be recommending? I wonder.
Oh, I don't know. But look, I think that liberals and conservatives will find things out about the Tea Party in this book that they don't understand. I think there are misconceptions on both sides. I think there's a lot of rhetoric on both sides. It's convenient. It's understandable in a political year. But I don't think it really helps us. I think we need to understand the Tea Party's been around in many ways. It's been with us for a long time. These views have been with us for a long time, these sentiments, and we need to understand them because they're not really going away.
There is this kind of perfect storm sense to all of this, isn't there?
Oh, there is. I mean, I think, again, if you look at groups like FreedomWorks and Americans for Prosperity that are helping the Tea Party, they have been trying to grow this grassroots movement for years. They haven't been able to. And it really is, you know, the economy is what makes it a perfect storm.
So what's going to happen in November? How many Tea Partiers will we have in Congress, do you think?
Well, I think actually, you know, I think a few weeks ago I was inclined to think that the Democrats were going to be successful in saying, oh, the Tea Partiers are all extremists and they're crazy and don't vote for them and they're going to get rid of your Social Security. Now I actually think that the Tea Party energy is going to carry the day in a lot of cases. I think that it's a competition between whether the Democrats can go race by race and say these candidates are extremists, or whether the Tea Party is just so well organized that they're going to win a lot of races. And I tend to lean on the side of organization at this point.
Who is more nervous about this, Democrats or Republicans who are more in the middle?
Well, I think probably Democrats. Today is a key day. Obviously, it's a big primary day across the country, including here in New York. And the primaries, the Republicans have really been the nervous ones because they're the ones who the Tea Party has gone after. But today's kind of a pivot point for the Tea Party because now that these primaries are done, they are training all this energy and all this organization on the Democrats. They are pragmatic. They know that they need to get rid of the Democratic leadership in the Congress if they want to be effective, and that's what they're after.
It'll be interesting to see how that unfolds over the next couple of months. Kate Czernicki, who is with the New York Times and managed to get inside the Tea Party. Good for you. Her book is Boiling Mad, Inside Tea Party America. It's just out today. Times Books. That's an imprint of Henry Holt. And you can get it on Kindle. I just got it this morning on Kindle. Worked just fine. So I'm one of the first Kindle subscribers, I guess.
Excellent.
All right. Pleasure to have you with us.
Thanks, Miles.